I'm always happy to have LaManda Joy on my program. And it's kind of different this time because we're sitting at her kitchen countertop here. And, you know, this is the new Mike Novak show. We're on location, not just nailed to a radio station. And I'm here to talk to LaManda about a number of things that are going on. First, hi, how are you?
Hi, it's great to see you.
It's good to see you. How come you're not outside planting stuff right now?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say it's nice to be talking about gardens on a snowy day.
Yeah, it's snowing in Chicago. But those of you in other parts of the country, never fear, because LaManda works on a lot of things that are of benefit to everybody in the country. One of them is community gardens. She is one of the founders of the Peterson Garden Project, and I've known them for several years now, and it's just an amazing organization, and here we are rolling into 2015. I guess we can start there. How do things look for the garden and gardens, plural, this year?
Well, you know, we're going on to our sixth year.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. Time flies so fast. And, you know, we have eight gardens now, our pop-up Victory Gardens and our workplace gardens and our garden at the Field Museum. And this year we just, you know, wrapped up the season in November and we had almost 4,000 people gardening with us. We had...
Really? Is that that many people?
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing.
It's crazy. Yeah. And we had, I think, over 7,000 volunteer hours. It was some crazy amount of time. And like, we figured it out, like it was the equivalent of 3.5 full-time employees. We had so many people volunteering, and that's just not in the gardens. That's other stuff, you know, that's, you know, orientations and helping with the new kitchen, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's been really a fantastic year and we're excited for 2015.
Have you added new spaces this year?
You know, we made a concerted effort not to do any new gardens this year because we are bringing the...
Because you're in over your heads already.
No,
it's no, I know you're not.
We're bringing the cooking school online, and we figured we needed to really focus on that. And yeah. New gardens, you know, they take a lot of work, both building the gardens and building the community, and we don't want to do things poorly. We want to do a good job at what we do. So yeah. We decided that we would, you know, not put any new ones in this year.
But as you said, how many volunteer hours did you get?
It was crazy. It was like 7,000 volunteer hours.
You're like your own master gardener course. I mean, one of the things about being a master gardener, and I'm a master gardener, I don't know if you are. You probably... Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Of course. She's flashing me the badge now, right now, her official badge. Is, you know, you put in volunteer hours each year and education hours each year. And I look at the number of hours that they have, and I'm thinking... Peterson Garden Project could be its own Master Gardener course or its own section of Master Gardeners just from all the volunteer hours you guys have.
Well, it's true, you know, but I think really the essence of it is that Peterson Garden Project is a community project, you know, so things happen because we have volunteers, you know, like they help build the organization. So
yeah.
It's a really interesting concept. It is similar to Master Gardeners, I guess, in that, you know, everybody wants to participate, but you know,
and you guys sell out early in the season, don't you, usually?
Yes. Well, yeah. And I was just going to say that we have about like a 89% return rate this year. So 89% of
Yikes.
Our 1,000-plus plots
yeah.
are coming back. So that means we have a very small amount for new gardeners.
You're going to be like trying to get season tickets at Soldier Field or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Or Wrigley or wherever.
We do get some funny emails about, my neighbor was gardening at thus and such garden and they're moving, but I would like to have their garden, you know? So like there's a lot of sort of black market maneuvering that happens, probably more than we even know about.
For folks who are listening who are not in Chicago, and even folks who are listening who live in Chicago and don't understand the concept of Peterson Garden Project, and I talk about it on my show, and sometimes I just assume people know what I'm talking about. Perhaps you can explain what got you going and how it works each year.
Sure. Well, you know, our garden was inspired by an original World War II victory garden on Peterson and Campbell. So that's where the name...
Hence the name.
Yes,
Peterson.
That's where the name comes from.
But you don't even have that space anymore, which is pretty amazing.
No, we don't. But the project part of the name is a really important piece because we wanted to see what we could do about bringing people together to learn how to grow their own food. So while we are a community garden project, we're really more of an education project because these gardens are set up to remove complexity. They're set up with education involved. The beds aren't too big, so they're not intimidating for new gardeners.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important point. It's like, well, they're 4x8 generally, aren't they?
Correct.
Or something? Yeah.
And if you're just learning, that's plenty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's could even be an intimidating space. But anyway, so our first garden was set up that way, and all of our gardens have continued to be set up that way. So they're really these teaching gardens. And you mentioned that the first garden isn't there anymore. You know, many community gardens organizations spend their time securing long-term land. We wanted to focus on long-term gardeners versus long-term gardens because here on the north side of Chicago, nobody can afford land. Our original garden space was $900,000. So how is a not-for-profit going to be able to swing that? So we decided that we would put our efforts into educating people. And so we work with, you know, institutions or private landowners or hospitals, what have you, to take up empty land for as long as they let us. It's a minimum of 2 years. We get people in there. We build the community. We teach them how to build a garden. And then we teach them through the year how to grow their own food.
And organically, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Organically. And the interesting thing is, you know, I said that we have a 89% return rate. What that means is that those people were new gardeners last year. Many of them were new gardeners last year. So they already have a year under their belt. So then they're able to help the new people that are coming on.
Mm-hmm.
So since we've been doing this for 6 years and our gardeners have moved to, you know, our original gardeners are all over the place, those gardeners become teachers. They become leaders in the gardens, which I think is really fascinating. And I think it really has, you know, been a good example of how people collaborating together, focusing on education, focusing on community can make a big difference.
There has to be one or two plants that have been grown in the Peterson Garden projects where you looked at them and went, I didn't know that could be grown in Chicago. Do you have any memory of that? Has anybody tried to grow quinoa by any chance?
Yeah, actually, we had someone growing quinoa and amaranth a couple years ago.
Now, amaranth I can see because it grows wild. It'll pop up in your garden. But quinoa is, I guess there's varieties now that can be grown at our sea level. But it's supposed to be grown in the mountains.
I've seen people growing it. I've actually tried to grow it in my own home garden.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, not so much what you know, and this is where the education comes in. It's not so much that they're growing weird things, but sometimes people, like, we'll see them lovingly trellis buttonweed because it's pretty and enthusiastic.
Yes.
And so people think that, you know, it must be something that they planted. So that's kind of funny. And no matter how much education you provide, there's still people that, you know, don't have time or not paying attention or what have you. So I always laugh, and it happens every year. I'll be walking through a garden and there'll be someone's lovely trellised tended buttonweed. And
do you ever mention anything?
Yeah, of course. If I'm there to see it, I certainly talk to people about it.
You know, you were talking about how you're not always going to keep the same space, that the original plot for a Peterson Garden project was taken over by a health clinic or something like that, right?
Right. They were actually the property owners.
Oh, okay.
And they were trying to sell it, and then they decided that they were going to use the land to put in a health clinic.
And which is great, you know. But that's one of the things you deal with if you have an urban garden, a community garden. Often they're in plots that you don't own. The community garden on my block, for instance, we have been there for 4 years. We're going into our fifth year, which just amazes me. It's very, very different from Peterson Garden Project because it's totally guerrilla gardening.
I love your garden. It's so cute.
Green on McLean.
It's made a difference on that block.
Oh, my goodness. It chased the gangs away. I mean, what else could you ask for? And it brought the community together. Now, one of the things I've discovered is that in our neighborhood, people move out regularly. They move in and out. I had some folks come to the door who were with a utility, and they were talking to us, and they said, how long you been there in the neighborhood? And I said, 14 years. And they went, oh, Well, usually we're finding out people are like here 1 or 2 years and they're gone. Mm-hmm. And that's our neighborhood at the moment. It's in transition. But this community garden is on a plot that we don't own. And we've talked to the owner and said, hey, can we garden there? And they said, yeah, okay. We're, you know, it's something's going to get built on it. Well, they told us that last year and nothing got built. I haven't seen any signs of anything. And this year, I've already told the folks who work there, I said, let's bring in soil. I'll bet nothing will go up this year either. But that's what you live with, that uncertainty. And we actually have an alternative plot if we lose this one, which is across the alley. Some guy said, hey, we'd love to have you there. And it's like, okay, cool, let's do it. But that's part of that whole community thing, is the uncertainty. And if you don't own the land, and a lot of people don't own the land, you just roll with it. Ken Dunn, who's with the Resource Center in Chicago, and he's kind of an icon, an institution in the city. I heard him say once something along the lines that you should be able to roll up your garden in a day and move on. And that's how he has designed his.
Right.
And that's not a bad way to go.
Right. That's how we design ours, too. We, you know, we pick up the raised beds. We put them in a U-Haul. We pick up the watering troughs and all that sort of stuff. And we just move it to the new location.
Yeah, we don't even, in our garden, we don't even do the raised beds, the frames, because that's more than we care to spend. I just, you know, we throw the soil down in rows and piles. And, it looks like somebody's buried there. And we just grow that way. And you really don't need the raised beds. Yeah, they look neater. There's an organization about it, I guess, but there's so many different ways to do it. We don't have fencing. One of the things we've learned is that we wanted our garden to be open to the public. Anybody can walk in anytime, and you know, if you really need some kale, pick some kale. Now the problem we found out is that if you grow pumpkins, they'll all disappear.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's the squirrels or the people. I have really no idea. And to this day, you know, we've 3 years in a row, we've lost almost all of our pumpkins. And last year we didn't even plant them, but the volunteers came up and we said, okay, let the pumpkin vines go. Let's see what happens. And we didn't get a single one. Not a single one. So congratulations on going into your sixth year with the Peterson Garden Project. That is great. Now, what is... okay, that actually takes us into the book, which is called, LaManta Joy's new book is called Start a Community Food Garden, The Essential Handbook, and it's published by Timber Press. And this is great because this is going to apply to anybody in the country, I would assume, no matter what your zone is and no matter what your circumstance is. This is your second book in a year.
Yes.
You must be tired.
Yes, I am tired. You know, this book, it's really interesting because there are no books out there about how to start a community food garden. And once I started writing it, I realized why. Because just as we were saying, you know, your garden, you use rows and you don't have fences. And,
right.
You know, and my garden, we use raised beds and, you know, we do have fences. You know, like there are so many ways that you can do gardens. You know, like you own the property, you don't own the property, you have the property short term, you have the property long term. There are so many variables.
Mm-hmm.
And every group is different. So that was an interesting challenge when writing this book. And also, you know, people start community gardens for a jillion different reasons. You know, in our case, we wanted to educate people. In your case, you wanted to bring the neighborhood together. It could be social justice. It could be veterans wanting to garden. It could mm-hmm. be, you know, a million awesome reasons, right? So
yeah.
I really had to think about stripping away the reasons why people want to start gardens and talk about it generically. Like, here's the handbook stuff. Here's what you need to know to get the community going, to build the garden. And then I really think that, you know, community gardens are very popular right now, but I feel that it's really important that we educate people, because otherwise it's just a fun activity and then nobody knows how to grow food and it peters out. So I wanted to include in this book, you know, the basics for people starting community gardens, to how to teach people how to grow food.
Yeah.
Because it's important.
Well, one of the things you discover, especially in a garden like mine, is that if you're out there planting, people want to know what you're doing and they want you to teach them
exactly
what to do. As you mentioned that earlier, how the people in the Peterson Garden Project become the mentors. The other thing is, you're part one in the book. Without community, it's just a garden. And I have said in the past, that without the community, there is no garden. You have to start with that, and we've all seen this happen with not just gardens, but with organizations and so forth. There's five people, and they're the ones who are the organization, and they try to bring other people in, but it doesn't work, and then it's just those five people doing all the work all the time, and then the thing collapses.
Right.
How do you engage your community?
Well, I think you need to start with the community. You know, you need to get people involved very early on. So it's their garden. So it's not the five people's garden. It's everybody's garden. And, you know, we learned that with the first year with Peterson Garden Project. We put up a banner that we were going to have a community meeting, and 50 people showed up. It was really shocking. But, you know, the goal was then to keep those people engaged by
to keep five of them out of 50 or 10.
No, I mean, and they're all, you know, many of them are still with us.
Well, that's great.
The point is, it's, you know, not my garden. It's not the staff's garden. It's everybody's garden. Like, they make the, we make the decisions collectively.
Uh-huh.
And so people feel like, you know, they have a hand in it versus, oh, these people are doing a garden and I can, you know, participate somehow. That's why we're very specific that we don't rent plots to people. It's a membership organization, and membership gets you.
All right. Wait. Okay. Stop right there. But I thought you did. I thought you pay for a plot in your garden.
Yes, but it's a membership, so you're getting much more than the plot. You're getting education. You're getting events where you can collaborate with people.
Do you have to participate in the education, or can you just, you know, do folks come in and they decide they're not going to?
Well, people can certainly do whatever they want.
Yeah.
We're not the landlords, is the point. You know, it's a community thing. You know, we're not Nordstrom. You know, we're not a customer service organization.
I gotcha.
And you pay a fee and then therefore this happens. It won't happen. It can't happen that way.
Yeah.
It's a community project. And so that's why we use that language. And I think it's important.
Uh-huh. What about this idea, though, of having people pay a fee to be part of it? And ours, it's... The fee you pay is show up someday, help us plant some seeds, help us pick up garbage. We really don't care. Anybody who shows up gets a reward. They're going to end up with some food if they come by, you know, on a harvest day. And is it important that you have more structure in a garden?
I think whatever works for the community works for the community. And that goes back to what I was saying about this book. There are so many different communities and so many different economic levels and activity levels and, you know, the amount of street traffic and, you know, there's no perfect way to do it. Mm-hmm. The perfect way to do it is whatever works for your group. And that's really what this book talks about, especially in that first section, is what is your group? How does that work? You know, what are the desires of the neighbors? What do people have the tolerance for? What do they have the skills for? You know, like, how do you find all that stuff to create a space that really reflects the neighborhood and the people that are involved, mm-hmm. versus, you know, going in and building the Taj Mahal garden when the community might not be interested. So, I mean, that first part is really important, and there's no right way. You know, we do it a specific way to help fund the program and to focus on education. That's just the way we do it. There's many other ways to do it.
So, how did you investigate other types of community gardens? Is it just stuff you've picked up along the way, or did you actively go out on the road and look at who's doing what?
Well, I've been a board member for the American Community Gardening Association since 2011, mm-hmm. and that's provided a lot of opportunity to learn from gardeners across the country. So I personally, made an effort to talk to the people in Seattle at the Pea Patch program, and talk to New York, and talk to, the Green Thumb program, and talk to the Austin Sustainable Food Center, just for me, when we were starting Peterson Garden Project, so I could learn the best ways out there. And then as part of the ACGA board, you know, we did the 2014 35th anniversary conference
right here in Chicago. Yeah.
But, you know, there's a conference every year. So you go to the workshops and you learn that every garden is different and every garden is the same. Like, we have similar challenges. We have similar issues. We have similar joys. You know, it's really an interesting thing. So a lot of this information is from my personal research. Also, you know, the ACGA, and I also have a project management background. You know, I came from the corporate world, so I've been able to apply a little bit of that to how we run Peterson Garden Project, but also being able to sort of break it down in a way that might be useful for other people in a book form.
And you also, of course, in the book, and by the way, we're talking to Lamanda Joy, who is the author of Start a Community Food Garden, The Essential Handbook. If you missed the beginning of this, well, it's on the podcast. You can go back and listen again. But it is the first of its kind book, which is great to be a groundbreaker doing this. And we're talking about how to get your community food garden started. You also, of course, can't resist giving people tips for growing food. You know, and the other book you put together last year was Fearless Food.
Fearless Food Gardening in Chicago.
In Chicagoland. Very practical advice, wonderful stuff. It always starts with the soil. What do you tell people about soil and what they should do? Do you, you know, find a good landscape supply company?
Yeah, one of the sections is the book is in the book is how to work with a wholesaler, you know, making sure that they have worked with vegetable gardens, because it's slightly different than working with landscape gardens. You know, I see that over and over, that people will engage a landscape designer or architect to build a food garden and it's not the same. So we do talk about that. We talk a little bit about soil testing in the book, you know, like just to be safe about that.
I know firsthand about that. And anybody who lives in an urban area should be aware that there are contaminants in the soil. Lead is one of them, but there are others that can be in there, arsenic and other things.
And that's part of the reason I advocate raised bed gardening, because then you're not, you know, if you're not doing in-ground gardening, you have less to worry about. You know, all of our gardens start with, we're either on a hard surface. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a garden that's on a tennis court. We have one that's on a concrete pad. Or they all have chips, you know, wood chips that we work with the city to get. And then we put the raised beds in this fresh organic soil in. So,
yeah.
You know, that really minimizes any concerns, kind of negates any
concerns
about soil.
You can cap off the soil because, and there are community gardens. I know we talked about Ken Dunn earlier. I know that he takes clay and he just caps the contaminated soil with clay, and then he puts the compost on top of that and plants into the compost.
Yeah, we could never afford clay capping.
And most people can't, but and I know he does that, but what we did in our community garden, again, was the simple way of doing it. Actually, it wasn't simple, because I took all the lessons I learned and then put them all together. It was like my pumpkin pie recipe, where I put every single spice that in the whole world in there. With our capping off the soil, we put down cardboard, and then we put down wood chips, and then we put down fabric, and then we put down the soil. And I just wanted to make sure nothing's going to come up. And lead does not move readily. So, you know, the important part is the fabric barrier. You need to have some kind of barrier there. But there's other lessons you can learn about that. I mean, if you have exposed soil around your raised beds, you can still have those contaminants blow in, because it's the dust that is the issue. And sometimes you actually have to remove a couple inches of soil from your raised beds each year if you're having that kind of issue. I mean, it can be really complex.
I think that those things can happen. And I also think that people make a bigger deal out of them than they really are.
Well, okay. And I will say,
and I think it scares people off, like, oh, you know, well, you know, like if you're putting your garden on the side of a former lead factory or an old gas station, that's not
true.
Wise. But if you're going into a space that's been residential or what have you, and you're putting down chips and all that stuff, you have very few concerns.
Uh-huh. You're right. You know, maybe I'm making too much of it.
Yeah,
but
I think the soil contamination people like to go into all the things that can happen.
Yeah.
And those things.
Am I one of the soil contamination?
I think you might be. I know you love this topic.
Oh no, busted. But I also have. I also know that most of the time the real problem is not that the plants take up those contaminants. Especially in fruiting bodies, they tend not to be there. And really, the issue is, don't eat the soil. That seems to be the real issue.
Right.
Clean it off.
Right.
And that's, then you don't have to worry about it. All right. We'll move. Wait, you were going to say something else?
Well, Cornell University worked with the Community Garden Organization in New York and went around. And New York has never done any remediation on the gardens that they tested. They went around and tested all the raised bed soils and found nothing.
Really?
So this is Cornell. This is New York, which is a very urban you know, potentially polluted area. So if they think it's okay, then I think
hey,
it's
if
okay.
Cornell's going for it, I'm with them too. Well, then I'm going to go dig up everything in that garden and get rid of all that stuff we put in there. No, that's fabulous. It's good to hear. And you're right. It's not as big a deal. I'll just erase this, what I recorded here, the last 10 minutes.
No, I mean, it's a good conversation because I think that there's a lot of reasons why we're afraid of the natural world, right?
Yeah.
And that's one reason. And the complexity of gardening is another reason, you know, and that's why, you know, the book that you mentioned, Fearless Food Gardening in Chicagoland, and the education that we have here, you really have to start at the beginning for people because we don't have a relationship with the natural world like we used to.
No, we don't.
You know, we're not an agrarian society anymore. You know, more people live in cities than they live in the country. So it's a different world than when our parents or grandparents or whatever were learning how to garden. They had people to teach them, right? And we don't mm-hmm. have that so much. So I think what you're saying about, you know, soil contamination, it is an important thing, but it's also just really important to, you know, get people out there to try things. You know, that's part of the thing we discover is like nobody, no matter what bucolic, beautiful, pristine garden you're gardening in, if it's your first year, you're gonna make stupid mistakes. I make some of the same stupid mistakes year after year, you know. I mean,
yeah,
people just need the opportunity to get out there and try.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you bring up a really, really good point, which is we're in a society that has become more and more afraid of soil, of dirt, of getting our hands dirty. I mean, I sound like what's his name on Green Acres, Eddie Albert. I want to get my hands dirty. And people with the hand wipes and the antibacterial stuff, there are some studies that show that you're losing the ability to fight off some of these bacteria because you're not exposed to them at all. And I think a really good thing is to show people compost and say, put your hand in that, grab that stuff, smell it, see what it smells like. It smells good. It smells healthy. And I think folks are afraid to do that. When you put this community garden together like this, I think what you find out is that you gain things other than just growing food, other than, community you discover. I was flipping through the book and there's something about therapy. I mean, it's all these benefits that accrue when you're not looking for them. And I'm just wondering if you have any observations about having watched Peterson Garden Project grow and what you've gotten out of it that was not gardening, really.
We know it's interesting because, you know, we can say a lot of stats about our gardens, the number of gardeners and the number of raised beds and all that stuff. And it's all impressive, but that's really a very small piece of what's going on.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that, you know, 10% of a community garden is the actual garden and 90% is the community. And I think that that's absolutely true. So I'll give you a couple examples. In our first garden, Peterson Garden Project, that summer, we did a little event with our alderman, Patrick O'Connor, who, you know, was sort of our founding father to help us get started. And people were at the garden just shaking his hand saying, you know, last summer I didn't leave the house all summer and this summer I've been at the garden every day. You know, so there's stories like that. There's hundreds of stories like that about people making friends or kids, you know, getting to see where their food comes from. We have a garden up on Howard Street where we work with an English as a second language program. So many of the people in that program come from countries where they're agricultural. They're in a new environment. They get to participate in the garden and it gives them some sense of home.
Mm-hmm.
It also gives them a chance to learn English because that's what they're hearing all around them. It gives them a place to hang out that's safe and great. So, you know, G.F. Lawton, who is a famous permaculturalist, said that all the world's problems can be solved in a garden. And I absolutely believe that to be true because I've seen it in every season, every garden, hundreds and hundreds of stories of people just, you know, relating to each other and being a good community. And food's the great common denominator. Everybody eats. So it's something that people can all talk about, you know.
I've heard people say that there are different kinds of gardens, including therapeutic gardens. And I always say, every garden is therapeutic.
Yes, I agree with
that. And then people go, well, then there's educational gardens. Every garden is educational. It's just you learn all this stuff all the time.
Yes.
And at the Global Garden on Lawrence here in Chicago, you're working with from folks. You're next to one of those gardens that features a community from Asia, Nepal.
Bhutanese, Burmese, and there's a few Iraqi gardeners there. Yeah, that's a, it's a, we share the space, but that space in the back is really a refugee training farm. So the point is that these people that come to the U.S. as refugees, which are different from immigrants, it means that they're forced, you know, out of their countries.
Right.
Again, they have an agricultural background, and so given the opportunity to, you know, do something that they've known how to do in the past, it's a wonderful thing for them not only to assimilate, but potentially, you know, if there's such an urge in cities like Chicago to put in urban farms and use these empty acres, you know, how great is it to have people that know how to farm successfully? So that garden is specifically a training farm to acclimate farmers from other countries into an urban environment. And then our community garden, which is like all of our community gardens, is in the front piece of that property.
One more thing about Start a Community Food Garden, the Essential Handbook by Lamanda Joy, who I'm talking to. What's in there that I haven't gotten to that you just are itching to get out to folks?
Oh, itching to get out to folks. Well,
I mean, if we've covered it, we've covered it. There's usually, you know, when you spend that much time writing something, and then somebody asks you about it, you want them to ask you certain questions.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the important thing is that this book is, you know, written so you can read the part that's important to you. You know, you may be starting a community garden and you need to start at the very beginning and read the whole thing. You may have already been working in a community garden and you just want some ideas on how to energize your volunteers, or you might want some ideas about how to train people. I mean, it's really set up so people can get out of it what they want to get out of it. But I hope, my hope writing a book like this is that when we started Peterson Garden Project, I had to learn from scratch. There wasn't anything really available like this. There was a little bit of information here, information here, information here. And I and my, you know, colleagues, we made a lot of dumb mistakes. And, you know, it didn't stop us by any means. But I thought, well, how great would it be if people could learn from the mistakes that we've made, the mistakes other gardeners have made, and start off on a good foot?
Let me ask you a quick question about that. You are one of the most successful community gardens, probably the most successful community garden in Chicago right now, because you have, simply because you have so many people. And you say, we made some dumb mistakes, and folks go, oh, they probably don't amount to anything. Give me a dumb mistake that you made that you would not do again.
Well, here's a very simple one. You're getting a giant load of soil delivered to your garden. Mm-hmm. You coordinated it, you've got people there to help, and there's not a good turn radius so the truck can get in and get the soil there.
Ooh.
Or there's a power line so they can't dump the soil. That sounds, I mean, how would you know that unless you know that, right?
Yeah,
you have to live
no.
through that stuff. It's a big pain. I mean, then you have to reschedule, have to have smaller trucks, may not be able to bring in soil at all, may have to relocate a gate. That's one thing, very simple thing that can really help people.
No, you're absolutely right, because we've had similar issues at Green on McLean.
Yeah, and you don't know that stuff till you know that stuff.
That's true. It's like I was talking to a group the other day about planting trees. And one of my pieces of advice was, look up. People plant trees and they're looking down. They're looking at the ground. They don't look up and see the power lines and other things that might get in the way. And you got to look sideways too. You got to look on either side. How big is this tree going to get? And folks, they're looking at their little hole and they're, oh, look at my little tree. And then they don't look up. And then in 10 years, suddenly they got to top it or do something stupid. Well, you know, the stupid thing was putting it in there. And believe me, I've done that. I mean, I'm one of those guys, too. So I know that.
You learn from experience.
Yeah, exactly. Is there a website other than the Timber Press for Start a Community Food Garden, the Essential Handbook?
Well, I talk about it on my site, lamandajoy.com. I think Timber Press is a great resource. It's available on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. It's available everywhere. You know, check out your local.
I think we just tell people, go to lamandajoy.com.
Sure.
Go to Lamanda. All right. Now, before we wrap up here, Peterson Garden Project is doing something this week. This podcast is airing the final week of January 2015. And so on the 31st, which is Saturday, you've got a big benefit at your new cooking space. Tell me all about that.
Okay, well, we learned early on when we were teaching people how to grow their own food, the next logical step is people need to know how to cook their own food.
And I don't understand. I can't follow. No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I joke that people sit around watching the cooking channel 24 hours a day while they're eating Lean Cuisine. you know, cooking has become something
it's kind of weird, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
And we found, like, with our gardeners, you know, they want to grow their own food. They want to cook their own food. Cooking from a garden is very different than cooking from a recipe, right? You right. have a recipe, you go to your grocery store and you get your 12 ingredients to make your food. If you have a garden, you're like, wow, what do I do with all of that? And so we started thinking about the fundamentals that people may not know when it comes to cooking. And we wanted to offer that. We used to do, like, we do classes here. Like, I do canning classes here around the island in my kitchen. Or mm-hmm. we do small things at our learning center. But we really realized that, you know, that is the next logical step. We call it plot to plate. You know, instead of farm to table, it's the community
I like
garden,
that.
Home gardener version of it, plot to plate. So we had the opportunity to partner with Harry Osterman in the 48th Ward in the Chicago Park District to get the culinary center at the Broadway Armory. And so we have launched this home cooking school. The soft rollout was in October with Chicago Ideas Week, and we wanted a couple months to try out some of the classes and see what people were interested in. And it is a community cooking school, so just like our gardens, it's volunteers. You know, it's someone that loves making XYZ, a home cook, a grandma, you know, a chef that wants to share something, you know. So it's not, you know, a fancy place where you go and watch someone make something you'll never do. It's very hands-on, roll up your sleeve, learn from somebody.
Where do the ingredients come from? Do you bring your own, or are they provided?
How it's provided.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's absolutely provided.
All right. I was wondering about that, because there would be health issues, I would imagine.
Well, it is a licensed kitchen, so there are
and rules. there's a weird history with licensed kitchens and shared kitchens in Chicago, as
right.
you know.
Well, this isn't a shared use kitchen.
Yeah.
It's a teaching kitchen.
Okay.
But the event on the 31st is called Dig In Neighbors, and it's our official kickoff for the space. And we're going to have 9 Chicago chefs who are all amazing. It'll be like the only time I think you're going to get this meal at any time in the Chicago's history. But great chefs. We're having a cocktail hour that's sponsored by Tangley Oaks Wines. So we're going to have wines and appetizers, and then we're going to move into the ballroom of the space, and we're going to have a long community dinner. And these chefs will be presenting their dishes and the people that inspired them to cook. You know, the
so you get to, do you get to watch them prepare the meals here? Is that it?
No. You're not going to get to watch them, but you're going to get to hear their inspiration for wanting to be a cook.
And I'm looking at the names here. Now, I'm not a fancy food guy, so I'm not going to be very familiar with some of these, but Joe Frillman of Belina. Why don't you can go through these names here.
Oh, sure. So we have Belina represented, Baker Miller, Cookies and Carnitas, Herb Restaurant, The Bristol, Nico Osteria, Fusion Dining. These are all, you know, popular Chicago restaurants, and the chefs are donating their time. They're going to be at the event, and they're really excited about sharing their recipes and their inspiration, really. For the reason
so,
that they
So they
want
actually
to cook.
Will share the recipe? Can people
yeah.
walk away with the recipe
yeah.
from this? Oh,
yeah.
wow. So they printed, or do you have to take notes, or how does that work?
We're going to have them available on the website afterwards.
Okay. All right. Cool. It's at, as you said, the Fearless Food Kitchen at the Broadway Armory, 5917 North Broadway in Chicago. It's this Saturday. Again, if you're listening after the 31st, you missed it. But it is Saturday, January 31st. And I'm hoping it goes very well for
you.
I think that's and it's a great new. It makes sense. The offshoot. What was that? Plot to plate.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea.
Yes, and if you do miss the event, just check out our website petersongarden.org for classes. We have all sorts.
Oh,
of
Oh yeah,
classes.
That's the other thing I was going to ask you. How often are the classes that you have?
Weekly. Yeah, we've been doing a Tuesday night class called Taste Test,
uh-huh.
which is sort of like a. Amateur night at the comedy club, where people that really love doing one thing, like we last week, someone made this Korean hangover soup. That's the thing they love to make, so they make it. The price point is really low. It's BYOB. We've been partnering with the LTH Forum, which is a Chicago-based culinary group, you know, like food enthusiasts.
Yeah.
So they worked with their members to pull together the instructors for that for this this session that we're having through March, April. And then we've been doing classes on, I just went to one yesterday about Let's Get Saucy, some basics on how to make sauces. We're having Indian cuisine. We have all sorts of amazing stuff. And again, it's all very non-intimidating, all stuff that people can then take home and do themselves. It's not an observational sport. It's really a dig in, hands in there learning, just like our gardens.
Yeah. And again, you can get all that information at petersongarden.org. I mean, even if you don't live in Chicago, you can take a look. And I would imagine they would click on the way the website. You're working on website design.
Yeah, our website is changing. But, you know, you bring up an interesting point. You know, we have a lot of resources that aren't for people that can garden with us or cook with us. We have a whole series of videos, the Garden Minute on YouTube, 52 videos about basic skills, 1 minute, very quick things. We have our book, Fearless Food Gardening in Chicagoland. We have a blog, We Can Grow It, wecangrowit.org, that has all sorts of great information. I mean, we wanted to teach everybody to grow their own food, not just the people that we can directly talk to face to face here in Chicago.
You're a great resource, LaManda, for Chicago and for the country and for the world, and a great ambassador of food and growing food. So once again, let me let folks know you can go to LamandaJoy.com, LamandaJoy.com to find Start a Community Food Garden, the essential handbook. Or you can go to Timber Press, and I got to tell you, Timber Press, they're the best.
They are the best.
I have followed them for years. I've interviewed a lot of authors from Timber Press. If there's anybody publishing garden books that does it better, I don't know who they are.
Well, you know, they're based out of Portland, and I grew up outside of Portland, I've always been a huge Timber Press geek.
Yeah.
So getting to work with them is like a dream come true.
That has to be. That's fabulous.
Yeah, I'm like a little giddy girl. Like they're so wonderful and talented and really good at what they do.
And did you get to go out to their offices? Okay.
Well, I go visit my mother, so I'm there in Portland. So we had a meeting or two, and it was really, it was really wonderful.
Well, congratulations on that, and I hope the book does very well. I assume it will, and you and I will talk again very soon.
Well, thanks, Mike.